Welcome to Ringside with AFD, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, coming to you the day after the Avalanche closed out their four-game road trip. Four-game homestand, let's say, with a big victory against the Florida Panthers in, like, very underratedly, probably their best performance of the homestand. They really took it to the Florida Panthers all night in a game where it seemed like Colorado just was dominating. They were almost going to get goalied in the beginning. One, you know, pretty bad breakdown leads to an odd man rush goal against Mackenzie Blackwood, which seems to be the only types of goals that are beating him these days. And then Colorado scores twice and adds an empty netter in a game where they entered the third period tied, and it never really felt like that game was going to get away from them. Something about being there just felt like that was Colorado's game, and they were going to take care of business, and they did. So I'm going to get into some of my breakdowns from that game, some of my post-game thoughts, but I do want to start the show with the more pressing topic. So I didn't get around to doing a podcast after that loss to the Montreal Canadiens, and you know, everything has kind of been coming together lately following that big game against the Buffalo Sabres where they lost Scott Wedgwood to injury. And there was an even bigger thing that's kind of happened over the last week, which was Gabriel Landeskog taking the ice and skating with the Avalanche at morning skate. He was there the game against the Sabres. The Avalanche, of course, didn't have a morning skate against the Habs. And then he was there again in the following game. Which was this one over here, the one against the Florida Panthers. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask and I'm doing a terrible job pulling up the article here and tripping over my words. So where is my notebook? Here we go. All right. So Gabe Landeskog skated with the team ahead of that game against the Buffalo Sabres. He skated with the team again ahead of the game against the Florida Panthers. And people are wondering what the hell is going on with the captain. The Avalanche right now are in a situation with their salary cap where it kind of seems like they've moved on from the reality of him playing in the regular season under the impression that, like, you know what, if he does come back, we'll figure it out then rather than hopefully he comes back and please, oh, please, oh, please figure this out and come back. So that's kind of what it's been like with the trades that they've made, bringing in, you know, doing that savvy move for Tucker Poolman to get a draft pick and to, you know, maximize their LTIR cap space. They obviously retained a little bit on Alexander Georgiev, and I wonder why the Sharks specifically asked for that. But they, you know, I don't think anybody's complaining about retaining a little bit of money on the remainder of Alexander Georgiev's contract, which expires this summer, giving up Kovalenko and a second-round draft pick for Mackenzie Blackwood. I truly, truly, we are about 30 days from that trade, or 29 or so days since that trade happened, and I don't think anybody on the Colorado side is complaining. Now, when it comes to Landeskog, it's kind of been a very strange season. Like, the season gets short really, really fast. And what I mean by that is, of course, we are at the halfway mark. And there is a situation and there is a scenario where 5 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, like coming out of the Four Nations faceoff, you're creeping up or you're at 60 games. And when you're at 60 games, you're 75% through the regular season. The trade deadline's right around the corner. Suddenly it's April. Suddenly you're making that final push for playoff positioning. Suddenly it's the postseason and suddenly it's year three of no Gabriel Landeskog on the ice, you know, assuming that that all plays out. So the question has been kind of brought to, you know, everybody wondering what is going on with the captain. He looked the best he's ever looked skating ahead of the game against the Buffalo Sabres and then again joining the team ahead of Florida 4 days later, whatever it was. But is he actually nearing a return? And there was a report from Frank Saravalli at Daily Faceoff. I do want to touch on after this report, just kind of the whereabouts of this report. But Frank Saravalli at Daily Faceoff reported on Friday that Landeskog hasn't been able to skate on consecutive days because his knee starts to swell. So here's a quote from Frank Saravalli. He says, the big issue is when he decides to push the knee, he then has to take a step back because he's immediately hit with swelling and the knee blows up. That's not good. He hasn't been able to consistently push it until we see a 2 or 3 week stretch where he's an everyday participant in practice. That's how you'll know he's getting close. Here's the big part of the quote. Quote, he's not close to that. He's not close to returning. It doesn't sound great, obviously. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I understand what's happening, because it could be as simple as if the Avalanche could figure out how or why his knee is swelling and how to prevent that, then he'll be, you know, ready to ramp things up and ready to go. Yes, sure. That sounds very fine and dandy. But if the Avalanche were able to figure things out over the last year, they would have probably already had him on the ice, given the fact that he's, I believe, now 4 months away from 24 months since an injury that was supposed to be 12 to 16 months recovery. So if the math is mathing in my head, May of 2023, Gabriel Landeskog got knee cartilage replacement and needed 12 to 16 months to recover. We are approaching 20 months. And he is yet to practice with the team on an actual real basis. He is wearing the blue jersey, and that's a respect thing. That's the PP1 color. That's the line one color. But if he's actually going to play with the team is another question. It's becoming more of like this distant hope, but at the same time, just like the season comes at you fast, like if Gabriel Landeskog progresses even a little bit, like we are going to close our eyes and within 10 days, it's going to go from feeling probably how we're feeling right now to holy shit, this is actually about to happen and it's getting close to happening. So things can shift one way or another really quickly. It's just a matter of just letting it play out and seeing what happens. And unfortunately, for as shitty as that sounds, that's been the case here for the last 2 years. That's just been how it's been. And it's not getting any easier to kind of navigate this. If you're the Avalanche, you have an impending Mikko Rantanen contract extension you got to look into. Kale Makar is going to make a ton of money in a couple years. You just re-signed Mackenzie Blackwood. There's some shuffling of the decks that's going to happen. Is Jonathan Drouin going to stay here if Gabe Landeskog doesn't play? And if so, how much is Drouin going to want to make? Is Drouin the option or is Drouin the answer given his injury history? Is Ross Colton shifting to the wing the answer? If so, who's playing third line center? Is Callum Ritchie ready? There's a lot happening that Chris McFarland and Joe Sakic are trying to navigate, mixed in with the fact that you got this big giant wild card worth $7 million and a very crucial piece of the team trying to figure things out. So it is unfortunate. Like I want to see this team win another Stanley Cup so badly, whether Landeskog plays or not. And obviously I'm rooting for Gabe. Anybody who isn't is crazy. Like, we are rooting for Gabe Landeskog to play again. And I want to see the Avalanche win another cup simply so they can say that the Gabe Landeskog thing didn't ruin the core of this team. Simply so we can look back in the past, look back to the past in the future, and not say what could have been had Gabriel Landeskog not hovered over this team's head as a big giant question mark for 3 seasons or 4 seasons or however the hell long this goes. You know, you can look back at the Avalanche's golden era, the first one, I should say, from 1996 to 2002, the ones where 96, 97, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, 6 times the Avalanche made it to the Western Conference Final. Only twice did they get out of that, and they won the Stanley Cup both times. So you can look back at that era and say, God, they could have easily had 3 or 4 cups. But you're not disappointed when you look up at the rafters and see 1996 and 2001. You're in the end, you're not disappointed by it. So you don't want to run into that situation again. You don't want Kale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and the rest of this core to end up Devon Taves, the guys that are still around, Logan O'Connor, who's a long-term piece of this team now. You don't want those guys in the future to think, you know, to only have one Stanley Cup and for them to look back on what could have been had the Landeskog thing not lingered. So I badly want to see this team win another Stanley Cup. That's the latest on Gabriel Landeskog. I'm not really sure where it's going to go from here. I do want to address one thing. I saw this in the comment section at Colorado Hockey Now, and I'm going to pull it up real quick. I don't have it ready yet, so sorry if this takes a second. Let's see. Actually, it was a tweet, so I'm going to pull it up. And it was basically the general vibe of the tweet was, and I know this is terrible podcasting right now with me quietly trying to find this. Here it is. Stompin' Clompin', big fan of the Avalanche, who love reading his comments. Stompin' Clompin' has been in my mentions for many, many years, and obviously is a big avid Avalanche follower and fan, and I love that there's always conversation here on Twitter and on Colorado Hockey Now. And it says, good article, Arif. I mean no offense to any of the Avs beat reporters I mean no offense to any of the Avs beat, and more so I'm questioning Sarah Valley. How would he know more about Landy's injury, his comments on the chronic swelling, than the reporters who are around him all the time? Is he just guessing? So the best way that I can explain this, and it's just the unfortunate, you know, reality of I'm not going to speak for any Avalanche beat reporter other than myself. People that work in the NHL in an insider role that have been around for longer and have done a better job than I have at building connections, they know more from sources rather than, you know, myself and other Avs beat writers, but specifically myself watching the team close by. And what I mean by that is Frank Saravalli is a plugged in insider. You know, people have opinions on his writing. People have opinions on his opinions, but Frank Saravalli is plugged in. He knows people. He's had Chris McFarland on his podcast. You guys are listening to my podcast. Chris McFarland's never been on my show, and there's a reason why, Frankly Speaking has had him, and Ringside with Arif Dean hasn't. And it's because he's plugged in. He's worked to build sources where I can go to practice and I can go to morning skate and I can tell you what I see from Gabe Landeskog, and I can go in the locker room and ask Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar, and they can tell you what they think about seeing Gabriel Landeskog, and I can talk to Jared Bednar and he can tell you what he thinks about seeing Gabriel Landeskog, and I can try to dig into it, try to contact agents, try to contact people close to the team. But the reality is people like Frank Saravalli have those connections, and because they're afar, it almost feels like they're more willing to tell them than they are the day-to-day. So it's just kind of, it's hard to explain. I'm not trying to deflect, you know, responsibility from myself having more sources. Obviously, in this position, you want to be able to build those sources, and you want to be able to have the ability to announce news like this. There's a reason why Sarah Valley was able to get this out there. The last part of the question, is he just guessing? I don't think so. And again, it's because Sarah Valley is a plugged in reporter who, you know, you guys remember, and people didn't love this, but he had the Seattle expansion draft as it was happening. He's connected to agents. He's connected to team employees. He's got general managers saved in his phone book that he's contacting every single day, in his contact book, I should say, in his cell phone. So that's why people like Sarah Valley, people like Darren Dreger and Pierre LeBrun and Chris Johnston, that's why these insiders are in the roles that they are in, is because they worked really hard to get plugged into where they are. So I did want to address that in terms of yesterday's game on Monday. Like I said at the beginning of the show, the Avalanche against the Florida Panthers was probably, in my opinion, their best game of the season. Or, sorry, of the homestand, of this recent homestand. It looked like their best, like, we're the better team here and we're just going to win. And it's not, you know, against the Buffalo Sabres or what you would have expected them to do against a team like the Montreal Canadiens fighting for a wild card spot. No, this happened against the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. So I want to get into some of the things about this game. Number one, like, it kind of felt in the beginning like they were going to get goalied, and it was just wild, just a crazy turn of events to see that in one period, Cale Makar clanged it off the post, Nathan MacKinnon whacked it off the post, and Devon Taves, in his goal that finally broke through late in the second period of a game where they were trailing 1-0, also went off the damn crossbar before going down, hitting Sergei Bobrovsky's backside and trickling into the goal. Like, it just was a trifecta, three straight shots off the post or crossbar, and you just knew that this team, like, again, it kind of felt, that game felt the entire time like, they're going to do this. They're going to find a way, you know, especially when they got that first one past Bobrovsky and they got a little bit of puck luck there. But it was just wild to see all those shots hitting the post first. Devon Taves obviously did have the second goal. He had the game winner. And suddenly Devon Taves, he has 5 goals on the season and 4 of them are in the last 4 games. He's had some surges here lately where he's starting to pitch in offensively. And he's really, over the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, like, he looks like Devon Taves defensively again. My goodness. He's got 5 goals and 15 assists. He's got 20 points in 37 games. He's a plus 11. If you look at his numbers where they were in the beginning of the season, this is miraculous the way he's turned it around. So just from quick maths, he's a plus 6, 7, 8, 9, 14, 15 since Mackenzie Blackwood joined the Avalanche. He is a plus 15. And how many games ago was that? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 games. He's a plus 15. He's got 4 goals and 6 assists. That's where Devon Taves has gotten to. 4 goals, 10 points, plus 15 in his last 12 games. And is plus minus the end all be all? No, of course not. But when you are Devon Taves and you are insanely, like, buried, minus 7, minus 10, you've got 0 points, you've got 1 assist in your first 10 games or whatever the hell he had, like, it matters. Like I remember Devon Taves had an assist on the very first goal of the season against the Vegas Golden Knights and didn't get another assist until November 2nd, almost a month later. And he didn't miss any of those games. He wasn't having a good time to start the year. Obviously, it's well documented. He was playing with a little bit of an injury, and he still probably is. But if he is, he's kind of started to figure out how to handle it. So seeing Devon Taves do this. So again, he's missed 4 games. He's played 37 of 41. So he's only able to play 77 maximum this year. My question is, so Devon Taves over the last 3 seasons, if you look back, so his first year with the Avalanche was that 2021 season where Colorado, well, not Colorado, but the NHL in general only had 56 games. Devon Taves had 31 points in those 56 games. And actually in 53 games because he missed 3 of those 56 games. So he was well on his way to a 50-point season. But regardless, Stanley Cup year, 66 games, Taves had 57 points. 2023, 60 games, 50 points. 2024, 82 games, 50 points. 2025, he can only, if he plays every single game, he can only get to 78. He can only get to 78 games. He's got 20 points. So my question to you, 57, 50, 50 over the last 3 seasons. Can Devon Taves get to 50 points again? He needs 30 in his next 41. He just had 10 and 12. Can he do it? I say he does. I truly think he's going to do it. He's up to 2 game winning goals. He's starting to heat up. Devon Taves going into and coming out of the Four Nations faceoff is going to be the guy that we expect from him. In the first year of his 8-year deal, he got over, you know, how to navigate this injury. And it's just, it's been really fun to watch him start to heat up here, scoring a big goal against Winnipeg, scoring the overtime winner against Buffalo after having 2 assists in that game in regulation during that Avalanche comeback, and then scoring 2 whopper huge goals against the Florida Panthers, tying the game, and then, of course, putting the game away with his go-ahead goal that eventually ended up standing as a game winner, and then assisting on Mikko Rantanen's empty net goal from way downtown for good measure. It's also been really fun to see Blackwood consistently put up the numbers he has. You know, I remember the morning skate against the Florida Panthers. Nathan MacKinnon did say that Blackwood's been the best goalie in the league since the trade. And statistically, he's correct. Like, statistically, Mackenzie Blackwood is 7-1-1. He's made 8 starts, obviously. He had to come in relief in those last 20 minutes against Buffalo when Wedgwood got hurt. But he's 7-1-1. He's got a .938 save percentage and a .169 goals against average. He has not let in more than 2 goals in any of the 9 games that he has appeared in. Not once. Alexander Georgiev has not let in less than 3 goals in any of the games he played for the San Jose Sharks. And I hate to dunk on Georgiev. That's not what I'm intending to do, but it's just showing that Colorado traded a guy, and obviously if Georgiev was here, there would be some games where he lets in less than 3. San Jose is not as good as Colorado, especially with the way the Avs are playing now, but also the Avs are playing this way because they have more trust in Blackwood. 7-1-1, 9 games, 8 starts, an extra appearance where he played about 19 minutes. He has not let in more than 2 goals in any of those games. It's either been 2 or 1. He's got no shutouts either, so it's just consistency every freaking time from this guy, and I love to see it. Statistically, MacKinnon's correct. But also, like I said about the Avalanche playing better, during that homestand, Winnipeg, Buffalo, Montreal, Florida, here's how many shots Colorado gave up. 22, 21, 23, 27. And the Panthers only got to 27 because they doubled their shot count in the third period. They had 14 of their 27 in the third period. 22, 21, 23, 27. They went 3-0-1. Two of those games went to overtime, and they were still 21 and 23 shots against in those 2 games. Unbelievable. Mikko Rantanen, obviously getting that empty netter. He's up to 7 empty net goals. The record in a season is 9. And Rantanen's got 7 in 41 games. So he's empty net goaling his way right to the bank this offseason with his new contract extension. Whether it's coming from the Avs or elsewhere, I still think it's going to be the Avs. But speaking of that, like, it does feel like every time the Avalanche are in a situation where the other team pulls a goalie, like, it feels useless. It feels like nothing's going to happen. And it's because they've been so good at closing out those games. Beginning of the season, I remember, I forget which game, but there was a game where they let in a late goal off a goalie pull for the other team. But lately, like, it doesn't even feel like the other team, the opposition, gets like much of an opportunity to tie it. Going back to the game-winning goal, Juuso Parsinen gets his first point, secondary assist, but he played a big role in that goal. Loved him winning that puck battle against the boards. Loved him using that massive frame. There was some confidence in his play there, which Jared Bednar did reference has been an issue with him with Nashville this season. But there was confidence in his ability to get in front of the goalie, take away Sergei Bobrovsky's eyes, and let Taves wire that bad boy right through the goalie. So shout out to Juuso Parsinen. If even Ivan and Val Nichushkin get back, which I can't believe it took me 23 minutes to give this update, Val Nichushkin is not joining the Avalanche on the 3-game road trip, which is very unfortunate. 7 of 10 days. He has been out now for 8 days. I was hoping he'd play on it, but it's going to be a little over 2 weeks when he probably joins the team and plays a game. But just getting Ivan and Nichushkin back would, you know, give the Avalanche the ability to take out Anala and Fellheimer from the lineup. And what that would do is, you know, whether it's Ross Colton or Jonathan Drouin or whoever, it knocks one of the guys out of the top 6, which would, you know, more than likely be Ross Colton, you know, assuming you need a centerman. And because Drouin's been playing really well lately, it could be Casey Mittelstadt too. Who the hell knows? But let's say it's Ross Colton. You could end up in a situation where Juuso Parsinen, whether he plays center or wing, would go from playing with Inala and Fellheimer or Inala and Olausen to playing with Ross Colton and Ivan. Is it perfect? No, but it's a hell of a lot better because the next step from that is getting Miles Wood back in the lineup someday, somewhere, somehow. I don't know what the deal is with Miles Wood, obviously, still month to month. But Ivan and Ross Colton would be a hell of an upgrade from Fellheimer and Inala, and that allows Logan O'Connor, Yoel Kiviranta, and Parker Kelly to remain together. 41 games into the season, Nathan MacKinnon assisted on that Mikko Rantanen empty netter. He's up to 52 apples, 52 helpers. Kucherov and McDavid last year both recorded 100 assists. I want to say they became like the sixth and seventh players to ever reach 100 assists in a season. I want MacKinnon to top it. I don't want him to just get 100. Can he get to 105? I think he can. Speaking of Ross Colton, he had the primary assist and looked like a dog, like a hound for the puck on that play where Parsonen made the screen and a strong play, and then Devon Taves got the puck through to the net. That was just his second assist of the season. I know he's got like 9 or 10 goals or 11 goals, whatever it is, but he's only got 2 assists. In 24 games, it's kind of a funny stat to look at, but Ross Colton's another guy you want to see him pick up, and maybe for him, playing with Ivan and Parsonen could, you know, start to generate some kind of chemistry until his buddy Miles Wood comes back. So that's all I've got for tonight, for today, I should say. I don't know if you guys are going to listen to this podcast tonight. I don't know if you guys are going to listen to this podcast on Wednesday before the game, but this is coming to you. I was not at practice today. Colleen Flynn at Colorado Hockey Now was there and asked about Val Nichushkin and things like that. But I figured I'd get on here and talk about Gabe Landeskog, talk about these last two games and how the Avalanche, you know, they're in a position right now, like by points percentage, they're not really a top three team in the Central Division, but they're in a position these next couple weeks to start to gain ground and truly gain ground on the Dallases, Minnesotas, and Winnipegs. They've re-entered that conversation, and it took an 8-1-1 run to do it. But for the other three teams, like Winnipeg, Minnesota, and Dallas, all winning today would give, I believe, Dallas a 5-game winning streak and Minnesota a 4-game winning streak, and Winnipeg would put them back in the winning column, which would be big for them. They still lead the Central Division, both by points percentage and total points. They had that crazy-ass start to the year and then kind of fell back down toward the pack. So they've rejoined the pack from the top. The Avalanche have ultimately rejoined the pack from the bottom. But Colorado plays Minnesota and Winnipeg, like I said, on this road trip in 2 of the next 3 games. And then on January 18, they play Dallas. On January 20, they play Minnesota. And on January 22, they play Winnipeg. All in all, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Out of the next 8 games, 5 of the Avalanche's games are against Dallas, Minnesota, and Winnipeg. The other 3 are going to start with the Chicago Blackhawks on Wednesday. That's the one where we all predict Trent Miner is going to get a start. And then you got the struggling New York Rangers and the completely opposite red-hot Edmonton Oilers. These are the next 8 games for the Avalanche. 5 of them come against Dallas, Minnesota, and Winnipeg. You want to be at your best for every single one of them. It would have been kind of a pipe dream to say this a month ago before the goalie trades, 6 weeks ago before even Wedgwood got here. But if you're the Avalanche, go out and win every single one of those. Go out and make a statement and take over the Central Division. So with that, if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little hearts. Follow me on Twitter at RunRightArif. Check out ColoradoHockeyNow.com for all your Avalanche coverage. Let's make hockey for everyone. And we out, champ.